Chapter 4.
Joris Sabayoth, human. Born in Rythkos, on Bortras, on 4-3-112, pre-Empire date.
Luke made a face as he watched the words scroll up the old Senate library computer screen. What was it about new regimes, he wondered, that one of their first official acts always seemed to be the creation of a new dating system, which they then went and applied to all existing historical records? The Galactic Empire had done that, as had the Old Republic before it. He could only hope that the New Republic wouldn't follow suit. History was hard enough to keep track of as it was.
Attended Mirnik University, 6-4-95-2-4-32-90-PE. Attended Jedi Training Center on Camparis, 2-15-90-8-33-88-PE. Private Jedi Training begun, 9-88-PE. Instructor, unknown. Granted title of Jedi Knight, 3-6-86-PE. Officially assumed title of Jedi Master, 4-3-74-PE. Summary ends. Further details of schooling and training?
No, Luke said, frowning. Sabayoth had assumed the title of Jedi Master. He'd always been under the impression that that title, like the rank of Jedi Knight itself, was something that was granted by the rest of the Jedi community, and not simply self-proclaimed. Give me the highlights of his record as a Jedi.
Member of Ando Demilitarization Observation Group, 882 to 781 PE. Member of Senate Interspecies Advisory Committee, 981 to 679 PE. Personal Jedi Advisor to Senator Palpatine, 679 to 577.
Stop, Luke ordered, a sudden shiver running up his back. Jedi Advisor to Senator Palpatine? Detail Sabayoth's service to Senator Palpatine. The computer seemed to consider the request.
Unavailable.
The answer came at last. Unavailable or just classified? Luke countered.
Unavailable.
The computer repeated. Luke grimaced, but there was little he could do about it for the moment. Continue.
Member of Jedi Force assembled to oppose the Dark Jedi Insurrection on Bipfash, 777 to 174 PE. Assisted in resolving Alderaan Ascendancy Contention, 1170 PE. Assisted Jedi Master Trasmins in Meditation of Dwinyuo Gwyn Gotal Conflict, 168 to 466 PE. Named Ambassador at Large to Zappai Sector, 821-62 PE, by Senate. Highly instrumental in convincing Senate to authorize and fund Outbound Flight Project. One of six Jedi Masters attached to Project, 7765 PE. No record exists after Project Departure from Yaga Minor, 4164. Highlight summary ends. Further information?
Luke leaned back in his chair, gazing at the display and chewing at the inside of his cheek. So not only had Sabayoth once been an advisor to the man who would someday declare himself Emperor, but he'd also been part of the attack against those Dark Jedi from the Sluis Sector that Leia had told him about, one of whom had survived long enough to face Master Yoda on Dagobah. There was a soft footstep behind him.
Commander?
Hello, Winter, Luke said without turning. Looking for me?
Yes,
Winter said, coming up to stand beside him.
Princess Leia would like to see you whenever you're finished here.
She nodded at the display, running a hand through her silky white hair as she did so.
More Jedi research?
Sort of, Luke told her, sliding a data card into the terminal slot. Computer, copy complete record of Jedi Master Joris Sabayoth.
Joris Sabayoth?
Winter repeated thoughtfully.
Wasn't he involved in the big ascendancy flap on Alderaan?
That's what the record says. Luke nodded. You know anything about that?
No more than any other Alderaanian,
Winter said. Even with her rigid control, some of the pain leaked through to her voice, and Luke found himself wincing in sympathy with it. For Leia, he knew, the destruction of Alderaan and the loss of her family was a heart-rending but slowly fading ache in the back corners of her mind. For Winter, with her perfect and indelible memory, the pain would probably go on forever.
The question was whether the line of ascent to Viceroy should go to Bail Organa's father, or one of the other family lines,
Winter continued.
After the third voting deadlock, they appealed to the Senate to mediate the issue. Sabaoth was one of the delegation they sent, which took less than a month to decide that the Organas had the proper claim.
Did you ever see any pictures of Sabaoth?
Luke asked. Winter considered.
There was a group holo in the archives that showed the entire meditation team,
she said after a moment.
Sabaoth was, about average height and build, I suppose. Fairly muscular, too, which I remember thinking seemed rather odd for a Jedi.
She looked at Luke, coloring slightly.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean that to sound derogatory.
No problem,
Luke assured her. It was a common misconception, he discovered. With mastery over the Force, people just assumed there was no reason for a Jedi to cultivate physical strength. It had taken Luke himself several years to truly appreciate the subtle ways in which control of the body was linked to control of the mind.
What else?
He had graying hair and a short, neatly trimmed beard,
Winter said.
He was wearing the same brown robe and white undertunic that a lot of Jedi seemed to favor. Other than that, there wasn't anything particularly notable about him.
Luke rubbed his chin.
How old did he look?
I'd say somewhere around 40,
Winter said.
Plus or minus 5 years, perhaps. Age is always hard to ascertain from a picture.
That would fit the record here,
Luke agreed, retrieving the data card from the slot.
But if the record was right... You said Leia wanted to see me?
He asked, standing up.
If it's convenient.
Winter nodded.
She's in her office.
Okay, let's go.
They left the library and started down the cross corridor, linking the research areas with the council and assemblage chambers.
You know anything about the planet Bortras?
He asked Winter as they walked.
Specifically, anything about how long its people live?
She thought a moment.
I've never read anything that mentioned it one way or another. Why?
Luke hesitated. But however the Imperials were getting information out of the New Republic's inner sanctum, Winter was certainly far above suspicion.
The problem is that if this alleged Jedi out on Jomark really is Jorah Sabaoth, he has to be over 100 by now. I know there are some species that live longer than that, but he's supposed to be human.
Winter shrugged.
There are always exceptions to a race's normal lifespan,
she pointed out.
And a Jedi, in particular, might have techniques that would help extend that span.
Luke thought about that. It was possible, he knew. Yoda had certainly had a long life, a good 900 years. And as a general rule, smaller species usually had shorter lifespans than larger ones.
But usually didn't mean always.
And after many hours of record searches, Luke still hadn't figured out just what species Yoda had belonged to. Perhaps a better approach might be to try to find out how long the Emperor had lived.
So you think Jorah Sabaoth is alive?
Winter asked into his thoughts. Luke glanced around. They'd reached the Grand Corridor now, which because of its location was usually fairly brimming with beings of all sorts. But today it was nearly empty, with only a few humans and others standing around in little conversation groups of their own, all of them too far away to eavesdrop.
I had a brief mental contact with another Jedi while I was on Niklon, he said, lowering his voice. Afterward, Leia told me that there were rumors that Sabaoth had been seen on Jomark. I don't know what other conclusion to come to. Winter was silent. Any comments?
Luke prompted her. She shrugged.
Anything having to do with the Jedi and the Force are out of my personal experience, Commander,
she said.
I really can't comment one way or another on that. But I'd have to say that the impression I got of Sabaoth from Alderaanian history makes me skeptical.
Why?
It's just an impression, you understand, Winter emphasized. Nothing I would have even mentioned if you hadn't asked. Sabaoth struck me as the sort of person who loved being in the middle of things. The sort who, if he couldn't lead, control, or help in a particular situation, would still be there just so he'd be visible.
They were passing by one of the purple and green challa trees lining the grand corridor now, close enough for Luke to see the subtle moire-like turmoil of color taking place between the thin, transparent outer bark.
I suppose that fits with what I read,
he conceded, reaching out to slide a fingertip across the slender tree trunk as they walked. The subtle turmoil exploded at his touch into a flash of angry red across the quiet purple, the color shooting out around the trunk like ripples in a cylindrical pond, circling it again and again as it flowed up and down the trunk, before finally fading to burgundy and then back to purple again.
I don't know if you knew it, but he apparently promoted himself from Jedi Knight to Jedi Master. Seems like kind of a conceited thing to do.
Yes, it does, Winter agreed. Though at least by the time he came to Alderaan, there didn't seem to be any dispute about it. My point is that someone who likes the spotlight that much wouldn't have stayed so completely out of the war against the Empire.
And a good point it is, too, Luke admitted,
half turning to watch the last bit of red fade away on the challa tree he'd touched. The Niklon contact with the mysterious Jedi had been like that, there for a short time, and then gone without a trace. Was Sabaoth perhaps no longer fully in control of his powers?
New subject, then. What do you know about this outbound flight project the Old Republic put together?
Not much, she said, frowning with concentration. It was supposedly an attempt to search for life outside the galaxy proper, but the whole thing was so buried in secrecy, they never released any details. I'm not even sure whether or not it was ever launched.
The records say it was, Luke said, touching the next challa tree in line as they passed by, eliciting another flash of red. They also say that Sabaoth was attached to the project. Does that mean he would have been aboard?
I don't know, Winter said. There were rumors that several Jedi Masters would be going along, but again, there was no official confirmation of that.
She looked sideways at him.
Are you thinking that might be why he wasn't around during the rebellion?
It's possible, Luke said. Of course, that would just raise another whole set of questions, like what happened to them and how he got back.
Winter shrugged.
I suppose there's one way to find out.
Yeah, Luke touched the last tree in line. Go to Jomark and ask him. I guess I'll have to.
Leia's office was grouped with the other inner council suites just off the cross hallway that linked the grand corridor with the more intimate inner council meeting room. Luke and Winter entered the outer reception area to find a familiar figure waiting there.
Hello, 3PO, Luke said.
Master Luke, how good to see you again. I trust you're well.
I'm fine, Luke told him. R2 said to say hello when I saw you, by the way. They've got him over at the spaceport helping with some of the maintenance on my X-Wing, but I'll bring him back later this evening. You can see him then.
Thank you, sir.
3PO tilted his head slightly, as if suddenly remembering that he was supposed to be acting as a receptionist here.
Princess Leia and the others are expecting you,
he said, touching the inner chamber release.
Please, go on in.
Thank you, Luke said, nodding gravely.
No matter how ridiculous 3PO might look in any given situation, there was always a certain inherent dignity about him, a dignity that Luke usually tried to respond to in kind.
Let us know if anyone else comes.
Of course, sir,
3PO said. They went into the inner chamber to find Leia and Han holding a quiet conversation over a computer display on Leia's desk. Chewbacca, sitting alone near the door with his bowcaster across his knees, growled a greeting as they entered.
Ah, Luke, Leia said, looking up. Thanks for coming.
She shifted her attention to Winter.
That'll be all for now, Winter.
Yes, Your Highness,
Winter nodded. With her usual grace, she glided from the room. Luke looked at Han.
I hear you dropped a double-sized thermal detonator on the council yesterday.
Han grimaced.
I tried. Not that anyone really believed me.
One of those instances where politics drifts off into the realm of wishful thinking, Leia said. The last thing anyone wants to believe is that in our sweep we somehow missed one of the Emperor's grand admirals.
Sounds more like willful denial than wishful thinking to me, Luke said. Or do they have another theory as to how we got edged so neatly into that Sluice van trap?
Leia grimaced.
Some of them say that's where Akbar's collusion comes in.
Ah, Luke murmured. So that was the thrust of Phalia's scheme. I hadn't heard any of the details yet.
So far, Phalia's been playing the Sabacc cards close to the fur,
Han growled.
He claims he's trying to be fair. I think he's just trying not to rock all the stabilizers at once.
Luke frowned at him. There was something else in his friend's face and sense.
And maybe something more? He prompted.
Han and Leia exchanged glances.
Maybe,
Han said.
You notice how quickly after the Sluice van attack, Phalia dropped the hammer on Akbar? Either he's one of the great opportunists of all time.
Which we already know he is,
Leia put in.
Or else,
Han continued grimly.
He knew in advance what was going to happen.
Luke looked at Leia, at the strain in her face and sense.
You realize what you're saying, he said quietly. You're accusing a member of the Council of being an Imperial agent.
Leia's sense seemed to flinch. Han's didn't even flicker.
Yeah, I know,
Han said.
Isn't that what he's accusing Akbar of?
The problem is timing, Han,
Leia said, her tone one of strained patience.
As I've already tried to explain, if we accuse Phalia of anything now, it'll just look like we're trying to take the pressure off Akbar by turning Phalia's charges back against him. Even if it were true, and I don't think it is, it would still come across as a cheap and rather mindless trick.
Maybe that's why he was so quick to finger Akbar in the first place,
Han countered.
So that we couldn't turn it back on him. That ever occur to you?
Yes, it has,
Leia said.
Unfortunately, it doesn't change the situation. Until we've cleared Akbar, we can't go making accusations against Phalia.
Han snorted.
Come on, Leia. Political waddle-footing is fine in its place, but we're talking about the survival of the New Republic here.
Which could fall completely apart over this without anyone ever firing a shot,
Leia retorted hotly.
Face it, Han. This whole thing is still being held together with hope and crating tape. You get a few wild accusations flying around, and half the races in the old Rebel Alliance might decide to pull out and go their separate ways.
Luke cleared his throat.
Ahem. If I can say something?
They looked at him, the tension in the room fading a little.
Sure, kid. What is it?
Han said.
I think we all agree that whatever his agenda or possible sponsors, Phalia is up to something, Luke said. Maybe it would help to find out what that something is. Leia, what do we know about Phalia?
She shrugged.
He's a Bothan, obviously, though he grew up on the Bothan colony world of Kothless instead of Bothui proper. He joined the Rebel Alliance right after the Battle of Yavin, bringing a good-sized group of his fellow Bothans in with him. His people served mainly in support and reconnaissance, though they saw some occasional action, too. He was involved in a number of wide-ranging interstellar business activities before joining the Alliance. Shipping, merchandising, some mining, assorted other ventures. I'm pretty sure he's kept up with some of them since then, but I don't know which ones.
Are they on file? Luke asked.
She shook her head.
I've been through his file 5 times, and I've checked every other reference to him I could find. Nothing.
That's where we want to start our backtrack, then,
Han decided.
Quiet business stuff is always good for digging up dirt.
Leia threw him a patient look.
It's a big galaxy, Han. We don't even know where to start looking.
I think we can figure it out,
Han assured her.
You said the Bothan saw some action after Yavin. Where?
Any number of places,
Leia said, frowning. She swiveled the computer around to face her, tapped in a command.
Let's see.
You can skip any battle they were ordered into, Han told her. Also, any time there were only a few of them there as part of a big multi-species force. I just want the places where a bunch of Phalia's people really threw themselves into it.
It was clear from Leia's face that she didn't see where Han was going with this, a sentiment Luke could readily identify with. But she fed in the parameters without comment.
Well, I suppose the only one that really qualifies would be a short but violent battle off New Cov, in the Cherba sector. 4 Bothan ships took on a Victory-class Star Destroyer that was snooping around, keeping it busy until a Star Cruiser could come to their assistance.
New Cov, huh?
Han repeated thoughtfully.
That system get mentioned anywhere in Phalia's business stuff?
No, it doesn't.
Fine,
Han nodded.
Then that's where we start.
Leia threw Luke a blank look.
Did I miss something?
Oh, come on, Leia,
Han said.
You said yourself that Bothans pretty much sat out of the real war everywhere they could. They didn't take on a Victory Star Destroyer at New Cov just for the fun of it. They were protecting something.
Leia frowned.
I think you're reaching.
Maybe, Han agreed. Maybe not. Suppose it was Phalia and not the Imperials that sneaked that money into Akbar's account. Transferring a block fund through Palani from the Cherba sector would be easier than sending it from any of the Imperial systems.
That takes us back to accusing Phalia of being an Imperial agent, Luke warned.
Maybe not, Han argued. Could be the timing of the transfer was coincidence. Or maybe one of the Bothans got a whiff of the Empire's intentions, and Phalia figured he could use it to take down Akbar.
Leia shook her head.
It's still nothing we can take to the Council, she said.
I'm not gonna take it to the Council, Han told her. I'm gonna take Luke, and we're going to go to New Cov and check it out ourselves. Quiet-like.
Leia looked at Luke, an unspoken question forming in her mind.
There's nothing I can do here to help, he said. It's worth a look anyway.
All right,
Leia sighed.
But keep it quiet.
Han gave her a tight grin.
Trust me.
He raised an eyebrow at Luke.
You ready?
Luke blinked.
You mean right now?
Sure, why not? Leia's got the political end covered here, okay?
There was a flicker of sense from Leia, and Luke looked over just in time to see her wince. Her eyes met Luke's, her sense pleading with him to keep quiet.
What is it?
He asked her silently. Whether she would have answered him or not, he never found out. From over at the door, Chewbacca growled out the whole story. Han turned to stare at his wife, his mouth falling open.
You promised what?
He breathed. She swallowed visibly.
Han, I had no choice.
No choice? No choice? I'll give you a choice. No, you're not going.
Han, excuse me. Luke interrupted, standing up. I have to go check out my X-Wing. I'll see you both later.
Sure, kid,
Han growled, not looking at him. Luke stepped to the door, catching Chewbacca's eye as he passed and nodding toward the outer office. Clearly the Wookiee had already come to the same conclusion. Heaving his massive bulk to his feet, he followed Luke from the room. The door slid shut behind them, and for a long moment they just stared at each other. Leia broke the silence first.
I have to go, Han, she said softly. I promised Kabarak I'd meet him. Don't you understand?
No, I don't understand,
Han retorted, trying hard to hold on to his temper. The gut-wrenching fear he'd felt after the near miss on Biffash was back, churning hard at his stomach.
Fear for Leia's safety, and the safety of the twins she carried. His son and daughter.
These whatever they are's.
Nogri, she supplied the word.
These Nogri have been taking pot shots at you every chance they've had for a couple of months now. You remember Biffash and that mock-up of the Falcon they tried to sucker us into getting aboard? And the attack on Bimisari before that? They came within a hair of snatching us right out of the middle of a marketplace. If it hadn't been for Luke and Chewie, they'd have done it too. These guys are serious, Leia. And now you tell me you want to fly out alone and visit their planet? You might as well turn yourself over to the Empire and save some time.
I wouldn't be going if I thought that,
she insisted. Kabarak knows I'm Darth Vader's daughter. And for whatever reason, that seems to be very important to them. Maybe I can use that leverage to turn them away from the Empire and onto our side. Anyway, I have to try.
Han snorted. What is this, some kind of crazy Jedi thing? Luke was always getting all noble and charging off into trouble, too.
Leia reached over to lay her hand on his arm.
Han, I know it's a risk, she said quietly, but it may be the only chance we ever have of resolving this. The Nogri need help. Kabarak admitted that. If I can give them that help, if I can convince them to come over to our side, that'll mean one less enemy for us to have to deal with.
She hesitated.
And I can't keep running forever.
What about the twins?
He had the guilty satisfaction of seeing her wince.
I know,
she said, a shiver running through her as she reached her other hand up to hold her belly.
But what's the alternative? To lock them away in a tower of the palace somewhere with a ring of Wookiee guards around them? They'll never have any chance of a normal life as long as the Nogri are trying to take them from us.
Han gritted his teeth. So she knew. He hadn't been sure before, but he was now. Leia knew that what the Empire had been after this whole time was her unborn children. And knowing that, she still wanted to meet with the Empire's agents. For a long minute he gazed at her, his eyes searching the features of that face he'd grown to love so deeply over the years, his memory bringing up images of the past as he did so. The young determination in her face, as in the middle of a blazing firefight, she'd grabbed Luke's blaster rifle away from him and shot them an escape route into the Death Star's detention-level garbage chute. The sound of her voice, in the middle of a deadly danger at Jabba's, helping him through the blindness and tremor and disorientation of hibernation sickness. The wiser, more mature determination, visible through the pain in her eyes, as lying wounded outside the Endor bunker, she had nevertheless summoned the skill and control to coolly shoot two stormtroopers off Han's back. And he remembered, too, the wrenching realization he'd had at that same time, that no matter how much he tried, he would never be able to totally protect her from the dangers and risks of the universe. Because no matter how much he might love her, no matter how much he might give of himself to her, she could never be content with that alone. Her vision extended beyond him, just as it extended beyond herself, to all the beings of the galaxy. And to take that away from her, whether by force or even by persuasion, would be to diminish her soul, and to take away part of what he'd fallen in love with in the first place.
Can I at least go with you?
He asked quietly. She reached up to caress his cheek, smiling her thanks through the sudden moisture in her eyes.
I promised I'd go alone,
she whispered, her voice tight with emotion.
Don't worry. I'll be all right.
Sure.
Abruptly, Han got to his feet.
Well, if you're going, you're going. Come on. I'll help you get the Falcon prepped.
The Falcon?
She repeated.
But I thought you were going to Nukov.
I'll take Lando's ship, he called over his shoulder as he strode to the door. I've got to get it back to him anyway.
But...
No argument, he cut her off. If this Nogri of yours has something besides talking in mind, you'll stand a better chance in the Falcon than you will in the Lady Luck.
He opened the door and stepped into the reception area, and stopped short. Standing directly between him and the door, looking for all the world like a giant hairy thundercloud, Chewbacca was glowering at him.
What?
Han demanded. The Wookiee's comment was short, sharp, and very much to the point.
Well, I don't like it much either,
Han told him bluntly.
What do you want me to do, lock her up somewhere?
He felt Leia come up behind him.
I'll be all right, Chewie,
she assured him.
Really, I will.
Chewbacca growled again, making it abundantly clear what he thought of her assessment.
You got any suggestions? Let's hear 'em,
Han said. Not surprisingly, he did. Chewie, I'm sorry, Leia said. I promised Kabarak I'd come alone. Chewbacca shook his head violently, showing his teeth as he growled his opinion of that idea.
He doesn't like it,
Han translated diplomatically.
I got the gist, thank you, Leia retorted. Listen, you two, for the last time.
Chewbacca cut her off with a bellow that made her jump half a meter backward.
You know, sweetheart, Han said, I really think you ought to let him go with you, at least as far as the rendezvous point.
He added quickly as she threw him a glare.
Come on, you know how seriously Wookiees take this life-debt thing. You need a pilot anyway.
For just a second, he could see the obvious counter-argument in her eyes, that she was perfectly capable of flying the Falcon herself. But only for a second.
All right, she sighed. I guess Kabarak won't object to that. But once we reach the rendezvous, Chewie, you do as I tell you, whether you like it or not. Agreed?
The Wookiee thought about it, rumbled agreement.
Okay,
Leia said, sounding relieved.
Let's get going then. 3PO?
Yes, Your Highness.
For once, he'd had the brains to sit quietly at the reception desk and keep his loose change out of the discussion. It was a marked improvement over his usual behavior, Han decided. Maybe he ought to let Chewbacca get angry more often.
I want you to come with me, too, Leia told the droid. Kabarak spoke basic well enough, but the other Nogri may not, and I don't want to have to depend on their translators to make myself understood.
Of course, Your Highness,
3PO said, tilting his head slightly to the side.
Good.
Leia turned to look up at Han, licked her lips.
I guess we'd better get going.
There were a million things he could have said to her. A million things he wanted to say.
I guess,
he said instead.
You'd better.